Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and I'm delighted to have you with me today. Today we're going to talk about one of our favorite topics, food, of course, and how we can use food to stay healthy. I want to remind you first that this program is brought to you each week by the VHL Family Alliance. VHL stands for von Hippel-Lindau disease. The program is focused on issues of interest to people with complex medical conditions or disabilities. And if you are dealing with more than one medical specialist in your life, then you too have a complex medical condition. And it puts more burden on the patient to coordinate that medical care because it doesn't generally happen automatically amongst our physicians. So we hope that you find topics of interest here, and we look forward to any topics that you'd like to submit to us for possible future programs. Let me start by playing you a little bit of information about von Hippel-Lindau disease, and then we'll come back and speak with our guest.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Welcome back. And now I'd like to introduce our guest today. This is Dr. Joel Furman. Hello, Dr. Furman.
Hi, great to be here.
Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. So Dr. Furman is a family physician and a nutritional researcher, and he's written a number of books. So Dr. Furman, I see that the main theme here is the way food can support us in staying healthy or not, depending on how we utilize it. Does that sort of sum it up?
Yes, and I think there's a couple of issues here. One is the discovery that a diet rich in micronutrients can suppress appetite, change food cravings and food addictions. The other is how addiction is a major reason why people are overweight and aren't successful on diets, and discussing the new science behind food addiction, which my scientific discovery on food addiction was recently published in a medical journal called Nutrition Journal this November of 2010. And the second thing is how that when you take a diet that's micronutrient rich, or you could say a diet of nutritional excellence to the extreme, to be really when we try to make an ideal diet, it has much more profound therapeutic implications than people realize. Things like reversing asthma, migraine headaches, not just, you know, people know you lose weight, you melt away heart disease, you get rid of diabetes, your blood pressure comes down, and you can chest pains and heart problems go away, but people don't recognize, you know, other diseases like lupus or fibromyalgia, you know, asthma, migraine headaches, acne. They don't see the relationship between autoimmune conditions, immune system dysfunction, and nutritional insufficiencies, nor do people are well-schooled in the new science that discusses how viruses and other microbes can mutate and change into a more virulent form. When the body doesn't have comprehensive micronutrient adequacy, it allows these viruses to change and cause damage to the body, like something like Guillain-Barré syndrome or kidney problems, or attack the heart and cause a viral cardiomyopathy. In other words, the point is that these are blamed on the virus and not on the body's lack of nutrients that enable the virus to mutate. And lastly, nutritional science has advanced to the point where we could win the war on cancer. Because we understand more the nature of how these biochemicals and phytochemicals work and how and what a true anti-cancer diet and lifestyle is. And nobody in America is availing themselves of this new research and this latest science. So I think my books and my writings and teachings bridge that gap to translate the most recent advancements in scientific research into the practical things you can actually do with your life to give you the opportunity to live between 95 and 105 years old, free of disease, without cancer, heart disease, strokes, and dementia. So literally, we're living in a time today where we have an unprecedented opportunity in human history to live longer and better and healthier in our later years than ever before. So I think that I'm just embellishing on your summing it up, you know, in a couple of seconds.
Oh, that's a great summary, and it gives me lots of things to follow up on. And before we get too deep into the conversation, I want to remind everybody that we are open to taking questions. You can either put your questions in the chat line. There's a chat line open at blogtalkradio.com/powerful-patient. Or you can call in to 347-237-4358 and ask your question on the air. Let me ask you about your micronutrients and food addiction. I've read a number of places that the food we eat today, even though it looks more beautiful in the grocery store, actually has less nutritional value than it had 50 or 100 years ago. Why is that?
Well, I think that is an escape from the real issue, and is let me explain for a minute. That's like a deviating from the issue, because the American diet is now 62% of calories from processed foods and 27% from animal products, and of the 10% of produce, that, you know, fruits and vegetables, beans, seeds, and nuts, and that we eat, half of that 10% is white potato, usually consumed in the form of French fries or mashed potato or potato chips. The point is that Americans are not eating any fruits and vegetables, beans, nuts, and seeds. The foods that are most phytochemical rich and have all the anti-cancer properties, Americans don't consume. They consume foods that promote cancer, and we can explain how those other foods promote cancer in a few minutes. And then we're saying, well, the
so
food
that
they're
saying that this, right, you're saying that 70% of the American diet is processed foods, things that come out of boxes or freezer boxes or whatever.
Well, I'm saying 62% is processed food, not 70%. 62% is processed food. 27% is animal products. So I'm saying a piece of chicken is like a bagel, because see, scientists has discovered the 14 vitamins and 16 minerals humans need not back in 1930. And by 1935, people were adding thiamine and riboflavin to Cocoa Puffs and vitamin C into Kool-Aid and all kinds of. We were taking supplements, but it wasn't until about 20 years ago.
So inside that box, there are animal products. Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Go ahead.
Let me explain. I'm saying that when you add a few nutrients back to processed foods, you don't get the thousands of nutrients that were present in the natural food. In other words, we found out in more recent times, more like 15, 20 years ago, that the major micronutrient load that was in food is not vitamins and minerals, it's phytochemicals. So what I'm saying is every strawberry doesn't just have 30 nutrients, it has 700 nutrients in it. Every piece of broccoli has more than 1,000 different nutrients in it. And the ones that aren't vitamins and minerals have more even anti-cancer protections and more immune system benefits than even the vitamins and minerals. So when we're talking here about comprehensive nutritional adequacy, we have to have all the nutrients nature intended us to have, not just half or some of them. Between 1935 and 2005, cancer rates went up every single year in America for 70 years in a row, and obesity and diabetes and autoimmune conditions continue to skyrocket. The point I'm making is that you can't get the nutrients you need by adding a few selected nutrients back to processed foods when half of them haven't even been discovered yet, right? And adding
so help me out here. I think what you're saying is that you really ought to eat the natural food rather than the processed food, which is trying to imitate the natural food.
It's not even close to imitating it. Correct. They're trying to add. People think even by taking a comprehensive multivitamin that we're getting what we could get if we were eating a healthy diet, and that's not true. You can't get what a healthy diet will give you from any type of vitamin pill. You have to eat the healthy diet. There are too many undiscovered.
Right, there's a myth in the United States that science is so great that we should eat the scientifically formulated wonder foods rather than the old-fashioned natural foods.
Correct, and I'm also saying that processed, I'm saying a piece of chicken is like a bagel, right? I'm saying here that the animal product, which is about 27% of the American diet, does not contain antioxidants and phytochemicals. It has none of those anti-cancer, immune-building nutrients in it, and neither does the processed food. They've been lost in the processing. So I'm saying when people are trying to eat low-fat, high-fat, low-carb, high-fat, high-protein, low-protein, it's almost irrelevant because their diet, all those diets, whether they're high in fat or low in fat or what, are still deficient in micronutrients. The only way you can have your micronutrient needs met for a primate is to eat a lot of colorful produce in your diet, and the colorful produce has to be a major portion of what you're eating. It has to be the majority of what you're eating. And we can argue as how much is necessary, but if we follow around a spider monkey or some animal in the woods, like a primate, we'll find they consume, you know, 10 to 15 times as much micronutrients as the average American consumes, or even that even the RDIs are recommended by the government. The average animal and monkey in the woods will consume huge amounts more of that per body weight, per pound of body weight. So when you asked me the question about 5 minutes ago, isn't our food supply depleted in vitamins and minerals? And I'm saying, well, you know, the question is kind of like, it's we're not eating the foods that have vitamins and minerals in them. Sure, the white bread's depleted because it's processed. And yeah, the grains, the wheat and the potato and the corn grown in the Midwest plains may have lost some minor amounts of nutrients. But the deep-seated trees that go 40 feet into the soil, the nuts, the seeds, the avocados, the fruits, the vegetables grown in California on a volcanic-based soil, we have some of the healthiest and most fertile farmlands in the whole world, and our government analyzes what's in those foods, and they're powerfully nutrient-rich. I'm not saying that that a green vegetable like broccoli or kale isn't just twice as much nutrients as chicken or milk. It's not 10 times as much nutritious in micronutrients. It's more than 100 times richer in micronutrients compared to the low-nutrient foods. So, and we're talking about our government analyzing the modern food grown in this country today. The reason why people are deficient isn't because our soil is so bad. It's because they're not eating the foods that have been shown to be nutrient-rich. They're eating they're eating a diet that couldn't be better designed to cause an epidemic of heart attack and cancer than we tried to do it when we intentionally tried to create those diseases.
Right, so we would be better off if we were eating a lot more plant-based foods and the way they come from the farm rather than the way they've been processed.
Right, and we have to also understand the micronutrient density of various plants, various produce, so we understand that a potato isn't nutrient-dense like a piece of broccoli, that a bean is a completely different food, that in other words, even among the natural foods, the differences in micronutrients is humongous, and those differences could mean the difference between not getting cancer and getting cancer. So people have to understand this concept of micronutrient density and learn those foods that offer us dramatic protection against cancer and facilitate a longer life, a longer and more pleasurable life.
Right, and we're used to thinking of foods in the big categories, as you say, the carbohydrates versus the fruits, whereas there's distinctions among the different kinds of fruits and vegetables, and some of them, as you say, there are powerhouses of micronutrients that we could be taking advantage of if we decided to eat them. Instead of being prejudiced against broccoli, as some people are, see it as the powerhouse that it is.
Right, and of course, the most nutrient-rich food on the planet are the green cruciferous vegetables, especially the green leafy cruciferous, like kale and collards and bok choy, you know, and cabbage. Those foods are very powerful anti-cancer foods. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, I made the radical claim, that, you know, people could say, who is this crazy guy saying we could win the war on cancer? We spend billions of dollars on cancer research looking for a magic pill, which is not going to get us anywhere and hasn't gotten us anywhere. We can win the war on cancer right now, and here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that today's scientific literature published in the, you know, Journal of Carcinogenesis and the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition and the British Medical Journal, the articles published right now that show that people with a high consumption of green vegetables in their diet have more than 50% reduced incidence of cancers like colon cancer, breast cancer, and prostate cancer, the common cancers that afflict Americans. Likewise,
right,
If you take a food like mushrooms, right? And there is a study published in 2009 with, you know, that showed that women who ate approximately 10 grams of mushrooms a day, and that's about one button mushroom a day, had a 64% lower risk of breast cancer. Now, shouldn't that be on the front page of the New York Times or the Time magazine?
Shouldn't every woman in America know that?
You know, that if you ate one mushroom a day, you'd reduce risk of breast cancer by 64%. If there was a drug that can do that, wouldn't people be spending like hundreds of dollars a month for that?
It would have been on the front page of Time. Let me just reemphasize that, because I think what you're saying to us is that we have more power inside of our own bodies to counteract cancer than is in any of the cancer drugs on the market.
Well, the cancer drugs on the market don't really prevent cancer, number one. And number two, the hype that they do make you live longer when you have cancer is mostly, they don't do that much anyway. And we're we're spending billions trying to win the war on cancer. If they really wanted to win the war on cancer, it doesn't cost us anything. It's just education, teaching people to stop eating a diet that causes cancer and start eating a diet that protects against cancer. And, you know, the remember I just said a minute ago that the people who ate those, the women who ate mushrooms every day lowered the risk of breast cancer by 64%? Well,
wow.
Here's the other interesting catch here, is that when women combine the consumption of green vegetables or green tea with the mushrooms on a daily basis, the risk of breast cancer dropped by 89%. Now we're talking about the synergy of eating the green vegetables and the mushrooms in the same diet, seeing almost 90% reduction in breast cancer incidence. I mean, you know, so this is information that people need, and they have to have this.
That's amazing.
Yeah, really.
And as you say, why isn't that in the headlines?
And why don't people know this? Why am I the only person teaching this information? This is a study that I didn't perform. I'm just reporting on it like a news reporter. I'm just, you know, reporting on what. But likewise, there's lots of evidence on the regular consumption of onions and tremendous reduction in cancer too. So if you eat greens, mushrooms, and onions, you'll get dramatic reductions in cancer. We're talking about winning the war on cancer, winning the war on heart disease, allowing people to live their life without fear of having a heart attack, a stroke, or cancer. And just to take a break with this idea of prevention for a minute, you know, I always love to intersperse some case stories, some cases of, like, for example, a woman, Pam, who was in my practice 14 years ago with metastatic ovarian cancer, was given less than 1 year to live, and of course didn't like that prognosis. But today Pam is alive, thriving, doing well with no cancer, because she's followed a nutritarian diet and built up her body's immune system. And I'm not saying that this is would happen in every case. I'm not claiming that this can do this. But in her case, it's true. It would work for her, you know. And all the people, like, for example, people who've lost 100 pounds or 200 pounds are people who are literally on their deathbed with advanced heart disease. We're talking about people who had heart attacks, who've had angioplasty, who had bypass surgery even, who still have their vessels clog up again and can't even walk a block. And when these people adopt the program I'm advocating here, they become thin, they become active, their heart disease melts away. It does things that angioplasty and bypass surgery can't do. It gives you true protection. These people are off their blood pressure medications, off their diabetic medications, off their heart and cholesterol-lowering drugs. Because remember I said it earlier that we want to give people this guarantee never to have a heart attack or a stroke? Well, to really achieve that, we want to have people achieve a normal blood pressure without medications, a normal cholesterol without medications, we want a normal glucose level without medications. We want to see people earn excellent health. And when you can motivate people to do so, it's not only preventative, nutritional excellence becomes therapeutic, and it's more effective than medication, obviously.
Right, and so it's a matter of getting your body back in balance and getting your body's own defenses working at peak operating speed so that they're able to protect you from these various either invading microbes or the possibility of cancer.
That's exactly correct, and I guess what I'm saying here is that the body, that cancer and getting heart attacks and getting demented and developing high blood pressure as you get older is not the inevitable consequence of aging. It's not the result of aging. You know, water runs off a waterfall and hits a rock, and after 20,000 years, the rock splits in two. But the rock wasn't broken because it aged. It broke because the water hit it day after day for 20,000 years. Likewise, when you get cancer or you get a heart attack, it's not the consequence of aging. It's because you abused or there was some insult on the body day after day for many, many years, and eventually you saw the disease process manifest itself. I'm saying this because I see my patients who've been in my practice 15 or more years who now they may be in their 90s, and they no longer have heart disease. Their blood pressure is normal like children, and actually, as the years went by and they followed the program, and they didn't need medication anymore, their blood pressure actually got lower and lower, more favorable and more favorable, the longer they stayed on the program. It wasn't that, in other words, it's not aging that makes the blood pressure go up. It's incurring the causes of disease day after day, year after year. In other words, the body innately is a miraculous self-healing, self-remedying, and self-protecting organism that tries to repair, rejuvenate, and protect itself if given the right nutritional environment to work with. And all we're doing is establishing that optimal environment for healing and let the body's natural tendency to stay well and be well, achieve full reign in its function.
And instead we're bombarding the body with more and more insults, as you said before, toxins in the environment and things like that that it needs to worry about. And so a lot of its attention is taken up with healing from those day-to-day issues, and we're not giving it the right building blocks to work with to do the repair properly. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. And, the body is not helpless. I mean, we can ferret out toxic products. There are toxic waste products in natural foods that we're exposed to, even if there were no chemicals, chemicals in the environment. And the body has to, the body is built to remove toxins. The body is already built to keep free radical production in check. The body is already built to actually repair the breaks in the DNA that when built up enough lead to cancer. The body can reconnect those broken DNA crosslinks if the immune system is fueled normally. And the body can even monitor its cells for abnormalities and remove them in a process called apoptosis, killing and removing cells that may become cancerous or cause further damage. The body has a host of checks and balances and mechanisms via which it's set up already to protect itself, but it can only do so if we're living on a sufficient amount of natural foods and we have micronutrient adequacy. And I use the word comprehensive micronutrient adequacy so people can understand that you could have a lot of certain nutrients, but it's the ones you're missing that's going to cause the problems. And with comprehensive nutritional adequacy, we want to have an adequate amount of the full spectrum of nutrients your body needs, both the ones that are discovered and the ones that are undiscovered. And that's really where, I think, putting this advice into action gives people such phenomenal results. And, and of course, I'm adding something else, I'm adding a new dimension to this, to the mix here, and I'm saying not only does it do all these things, not only is what you eat so critically important, but the reason people get overweight is because they desire more food than they need. They desire more calories than they need. And it's the lack of the comprehensive micronutrient adequacy, it's the lack of the nutritional, the correct nutrition that leads to and creates those sensations of wanting to overeat and one food addiction, and makes people disconnect with their instinctual drives that would lead them to a lesser amount or correct or proper amount of calories to maintain their lean body mass for the rest of their life.
You alluded to this before as well, is food addiction. So tell us more about how food addictions get established and how we could try to break out of them.
Well, I find this information on food addiction very interesting, and that's why I've written and published and did a lot of study on this, because I think it's really fascinating and fun to talk about, even though it's a little complicated. So let me explain it to you in a way that hopefully people understand it. The body cycles in phases in digesting food and then living off of what you just digested. In other words, it's like you go to the gas station and you fill your car with gasoline, and that's called an anabolic phase. It's building up. You're digesting food, and you're taking the breakdown products from digestion, you're storing them away like your car, and you're filling your tank up with gas, and that's called the building phase. It's called anabolic. And then your body finishes digesting. It's not eating anymore. It's doing nothing. And your body goes into a catabolic phase where you're living off of what you digested and stored. And the catabolic phase is when you take your car for a drive. You're not filling up. You're burning off the gas in your car. So we can recycle between anabolic phases where we refeed and fuel, and catabolic phases where we burn off the fuel. All right? You can understand that. Fueling and burning off the fuel, right? Now, in the catabolic phase, when we're burning off that fuel, That's when the body is in a heightened phase of healing and self-repair. When we're in the digesting phase and storage phase, the body stops the repair and healing, and people, and it's somewhat stimulating as blood is pumped and circulation increases the blood flow to the digestive tract. So a person who's drinking, you know, 5 cups of coffee a day, or a person who has a lot of stress in their tissues and free radical production or toxins build up, when they go into that catabolic phase of not digesting, they could start to feel uncomfortable, because that's when detox is heightened. In the catabolic phase, you have heightened sensations of detox, and then they'll feel shaky and weak, headachy, stomach cramping, little mental confusion or fuzziness, and they'll eat. They'll put themselves back in the anabolic phase again because they'll feel better. As a matter of fact, a lot of people, because their diets are so poor, they don't feel okay unless they're always remain in the anabolic phase. The minute they enter the catabolic phase, they don't feel well enough. They've got to go back and eat something again. And they actually think that feeling sick and fatigued or hunger and feeling shaky and weak or hunger, and they eat again to feel well. It's like taking a cup of coffee to feel better after getting off coffee or taking a shot of heroin. Because snort of heroin because you're getting withdrawal from heroin to feel better. Feeling better isn't getting better. Feeling better is getting worse. Feeling worse is getting better. That's detoxing. And that's getting off the things that you're taking that are poisonous. As a matter of fact, anything you consume in life that you take that makes you feel better is usually bad for you, because healthy things like broccoli don't make you feel better. You feel nothing. You may feel good because you're healthy, but you can't stop a bad, you know, it doesn't have medicinal effects or pharmacologic effects. The things that have, you know, pharmacologic effects are toxic. That's the first thing you learn in medical school. And the natural herbal products that have the pharmacologic effects to make you urinate more or urinate less or take your headache away or put you to sleep or to wake you up or slow down your heart or speed up your heart, those are all effects of the toxic portions of the plant that have medicinal properties because they are toxic or poisonous to interfere with natural body function. Nevertheless, getting back to this glucose curve where you eat the meal and your glucose curve goes up, and then you break down that glucose, you store it as glycogen. In the catabolic phase, we turn the glycogen back to glucose to fuel the brain. Now, and if you're healthy and eating a healthy diet, you should feel nothing in this catabolic phase. You shouldn't feel sickly. But when the glycogen stores are mostly utilized, and the brain's going to need glucose, the body then can, after the glycogen is gone, could break down muscle tissue to make glucose, break down amino acids to manufacture glucose through the brain. But that's not efficient. The body doesn't want to waste muscle tissue. So it will give the person a signal of hunger, true hunger, to eat again before any muscle tissue was lost. And that's felt in the mouth and throat. And it's accompanied by dramatic enhancements in taste sensation. That's very pleasurable. When people get healthy enough, they lose the detox hunger, the toxic hunger in the catabolic phase. They feel well in the catabolic phase. And they can wait till they get this sensation of true hunger, when listened to, will direct you to the exact amount of calories you require to maintain your lean body mass. And your body gives you the natural instincts and signals to eat the exact amount of food that you should consume so your body weight stays perfect for your whole life. There's not obese animals walking around in the forest here. We're talking here about there shouldn't be any obese humans if they were eating healthy food. You wouldn't go to a desert island and see obese monkeys or even obese humans if they were shipwrecked on that island. Did you ever watch the show Gilligan's Island?
Right, and I've heard, too, that many Americans interpret thirst as hunger because we basically are mostly water-deprived. We're not drinking enough water,
Yeah, well, I don't agree. I just wanted to say the punchline of my joke, if I could.
Sure.
When I said, did you ever watch Gilligan's Island? I was going to make a joke. The joke is, and I was going to say, you know, well, that's how you know for sure that Skipper never really lived on the island. To get the joke, you got to know the show. You got to know the show and know that Skipper was heavy.
Yeah, okay, right. But Skipper was heavy.
Yeah, just one of my jokes. Okay. But anyway, So, you know, I'm kind of disagreeing with you about this water thing and thirst. Because the American diet is so high in salt, and it's so low in nutrients, and we're not eating. And if you were eating a natural food diet, high in plant and a lot of plant produce, you'd get a lot of water. It would be very low in salt. You'd hardly ever be thirsty. You wouldn't be water deprived. You wouldn't be. So this, the the fact that Americans are dehydrated and thirsty isn't because they're not drinking enough water. It's because their diet is dry and their diet is too high in sodium. It's not because they're not drinking enough water. I just want to, you know,
well,
I have a little different take on the issue.
Or it may be both. But in any event, getting back to your point about nutrients, if people get into this food addiction partly because the diet that they're eating is not really giving them the nutrient load that they need, and therefore they think they need more food rather than being satisfied with the quantity that they've already taken in?
That's right. It's like you fill your car with gasoline, and now instead of burning off the gas, you try to refill it when you've just driven it one or two blocks. People keep fueling their tank, and they haven't utilized the stored reserve of glycogen and nutrients. Your body just took in and stored away. So, of course, what's going to happen? You're not like a car. It's not going to overflow on the pavement. You're going to keep putting on weight. When you eat too frequently and too much, it comes out in the body as fat, mucus, allergies, immune conditions, and eventually, you know, body breakdown and aging. But the other thing is what you were alluding to, is that when you're eating foods that are low in nutrients, like bagels and sugar and donuts and cookies and crackers and rice cakes and oils and all kinds of crap, you know, that people eat, as you eat those foods, you're building up. You're not just not taking in my micronutrients. It's not just that you're not getting nutrients. It's also that the lack of micronutrients also allows the body to build up free radicals, advanced glycation end products, lipofuscin, aldehydes. In other words, there's a lot of other toxic waste products that build up in proportion to your consumption of low-nutrient food because your body, number one, it contributes toxins, and number two, it doesn't give the body the fuels it needs to control the buildup of those types of toxins. So you build up waste products, and it's almost as if you were a heroin addict or you're smoking cigarettes all the time. Actually, being obese is a bigger risk factor for shortening lifespan than is even smoking cigarettes. But the point that I'm making here is that these toxic waste products build up in your tissues, and you become addicted to them. And the word addiction means you get pain when you try to stop eating. So when you try to stop eating unhealthy, either by not eating or by eating something healthy, you actually feel worse. You start to go through detox. And, of course, it's this detox or circulating the toxic waste products in the tissues for removal that it makes people feel ill, and it's inhibiting the detox when you eat again. And that's why people, and that's what the word addict is. The word addiction means that you can't stop doing something because you get physical discomfort when you try to stop it. And that's what happens when people try to stop overeating. They get physically uncomfortable when they try to stop eating all the time. And their discomfort that they think is hunger, they think that it's not addiction because they think, I got to eat because I'm hungry. I don't feel well. I must be hungry because it goes away when I eat. And I'm saying, well, but if you're healthy enough, then those symptoms which you think are hunger will go away, and you'll get connected again with what I'm calling true hunger, which will direct you to recognize you were eating much too much food, and you will also be satisfied with less. That's the thing. I mean, we did a study here on 748 people in that we reported on the Nutrition Journal. A lot of people following my high nutrient diet program, and they got they didn't just get a lessened the symptoms of hunger diminished. They didn't feel like as hungry. They didn't want to eat as frequently. But the symptoms of hunger changed to a different type of sensations, and those sensations became intensely pleasurable. So pleasurable, in fact, that people prefer to wait to eat so they can eat when they feel hungry, because food just is such an incredibly pleasurable sensation when you eat when you're really hungry. So if I'm finishing, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock and heading home in the afternoon, I'm not hungry. I'd rather like go for a run, exercise, do something, delay dinner. I'd like to, you know, work up an appetite so I can eat when I'm hungry. But it's so much more fun to eat that way. So in other words, it gets it so you don't have to count calories and measure food and count, you know, and be on a diet. No, you know, these people who've lost hundreds of pounds following my program aren't on a diet. They're just eating as much as they want, but they do want less because they desire less because they're obviously not feeling the need to have to overeat anymore.
So if people are interested in learning about this program, what's the best way for them to become familiar with your program?
Well, they could read one of my books. I mean, my most well-known book is called...
Which one? Eat for Health or Eat to Live?
Live
which one is the best one to start with?
Well, they're both a little different. Eat to Live is the best book if you have lots of weight to lose. I mean, Eat to Live is my most famous book. It was just a newer version, a revised version, came out in January 2011, and that book has, you know, is It's the, you know, the Bible for people who want to lose weight and reverse disease. It kind of jumps in with the full plan. You know, 1, 2, 3, start. You know, you're going to lose 15 pounds the first month, 10 pounds the second month, and 8 pounds the third month. In other words, the average person will lose almost 35 pounds in the first 3 months. So that's the Eat to Live book. The Eat for Health book is, you know, I wrote Eat for Health for the corporate marketplace, you know, for people who want to give it to their own employees, so people, like, you know, go into a program a little more gradually paced, and, you know, but it's still, they're both, you know, I have a few books out, I have a lot of different books on the market, Disease Proof Your Child, Cholesterol Protection for Life, but I think Eat to Live is certainly a good, basic, inexpensive book. You can get it at our website or on Amazon or in bookstores, and of course, my website is drfurman.com, and that's drfurman.com. And I, you know, and obviously, I answer people's health and nutrition questions there, and have member services where people can, you know, get newsletters and talk to, and forums where people could discuss their condition with other people and get support. And with me, they can ask me their questions directly and help guide them to solve some of their issues, whether they have, you know, heart disease or diabetes or gestational diabetes or fibromyalgia, whatever thing they're, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, they can get some specific advice to help modify their dietary recommendations for their particular needs. So that's really the exciting for me, because I'm watching, you know, I'm able to affect people in a positive way who live all over the world, and we have members from all over the world, completely all over the world. It's a worldwide membership. It's really exciting.
Right. So that's Eat to Live, and the website is www.drfurman.com. That's drfurman.com. You mentioned also Disease Proof Your Child. What recommendations beyond what we've already talked about are there in Disease Proof Your Child?
Well, you know,
we have so many more kids these days, for example, with allergies to peanuts than we've ever had before. And, you know, when I went to school, I didn't know a single person with an allergy to peanuts. Now it seems like every third child is allergic to peanuts, and there are peanut-free classrooms because somebody has a particularly pernicious allergy to peanuts.
Absolutely. And my greatest fear is that the influx of all this processed fake food on women and pregnancies and on children, causing all these diseases that never occurred before in human history. I mean, my prediction, my fear, of hope this never comes true, of course, is that breast cancer is going to skyrocket in the next 20, 30 years, and it's going to occur in higher amounts in younger and younger women. That's my biggest fear.
It already is skyrocketing. When I had breast cancer in 1979, it was one woman in 11. Now it's one woman in 8, and in some countries it's one in 6. So it's already going way up.
Yeah, and then my concern is going to, you know, and unlike prostate cancer, which affects men, you know, it's a little more slowly growing, and affects men usually when they're older. My concern is that this breast cancer is going to happen to women younger and younger, and then it's more aggressive when it happens younger. It's really scary, and because we set the stage for these cancers to occur by what we feed our kids in the first 10 years of life, and because women themselves become food addicts and are into processed foods and fast foods and feed their young children foods like that. I mean, and we're seeing now, just like we're seeing the diabetes occur younger and obesity occur younger, and now we're seeing strokes occurring younger. You know, you actually were seeing people in their 30s having strokes that were never unheard of before. You know what I mean? I'm really worried that with all this processed food and fake food and the convenience foods out of bags and boxes and jars, and, you know, instead of getting back to homegrown foods and natural foods, my concern, of course, is that we're going to see even a larger increase in the rate of breast cancer. It's going to happen in young women. It's going to be tragic. And, of course, everything that we're doing in the cancer community is almost worthless. Mammograms and wearing pink ribbons and giving money to drug companies to search for more pills, it's all just worthless stuff. We have to stop it from occurring. I think Disease Proof Your Child tells exactly why what you feed your child in the first 10 years of life can create cancer down the road and cause them to have what you're talking about, the immune system disorders, the autoimmune diseases, the lupus, the mental disorders. It causes, you know, we're destroying the future of our nation, our own children that we love so much. We hold them, you know, we look at our babies and our children, we love them so much, we do anything for them. We brush their teeth at night, we put seatbelts on, we put them in those special seats in the car, and then we feed them a diet that's going to kill them and that's going to take years off of life and create cancer. It's just insane. We live in, it's just insane. People have to educate themselves. And, you know, I'm so, what's the word, excited about this, obviously, and so, you know, emotional about this, because it's like we
it's your thing, sure.
Yeah, it's my thing, and when we people go through elementary school and high school and college and graduate school and medical school, and the most important knowledge that could have been imparted to them, where they can have control of their health destiny. And I don't care if people smoke or shoot up with drugs and do whatever they want. Let them do whatever they want. But at least they should know what they're the consequences of what they're doing, don't you think?
And
the point that I'm making here is...
The irony about convenience foods is that they really don't save you that much time. I mean, I went home last night. I didn't get out of the office until 10 o'clock at night. I went home. I put some rice in my rice cooker and cooked up a piece of salmon and made a salad. And in 20 minutes, I was sitting down and having a very healthy meal. And I thought to myself, you know, if I had pulled out some, quote, convenience food, how much time would I have saved?
True,
20 minutes?
Right,
you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes at the most. But when you do start really going back and eating in a healthy way, it starts with your trip to the grocery store. And it's what you put in your cart that matters at least as much as any other element in your week. And I think if we all start, one of the things I've learned is I shop the perimeter of the grocery store. I almost never go down the middle. You know, it's really interesting. You know, go to the dairy and the fish and the meats and the fresh veggies and the fresh fruits. And all that packaged stuff in the middle, I really don't visit.
Well, first of all, raw vegetables are critical. And salad, you know, I tell people to put a big sign in their refrigerator that says the salad is the main dish. They have to eat a large salad at least once a day. And that meat, and they have to put a healthy salad dressing on. But you don't have to make it, so it doesn't take any time to, you know, slice some vegetables, slice some lettuce or a tomato into a bowl or some red onion into a bowl or something. There are frozen peas on top or open a can of beans on top. It doesn't take any time. But I want people to make a healthy dressing. And that, you know, could take a few minutes, but you make a dressing and then you put it in the refrigerator and you eat it for 3 or 4 days. Like I might take an orange and whip it up with maybe some raw cashews and sesame seeds and a little blood orange vinegar or lemon and make an orange cashew sesame dressing. And I'll use that same dressing for 3 or 4 days, and then I'll make a different dressing. Maybe I'll take some tomato sauce, sun-dried tomatoes, roasted garlic, and some almond butter, almonds, and sunflower seeds, and fig vinegar or balsamic vinegar, and make a tomato-based dressing. I'll save eat that one for in a couple of days, you know what I mean? So I'll make a dressing or a dip, you know. The point is that eating healthy, you could make food taste incredibly gourmet, incredibly delicious, that we even make delicious pies and cakes out of beets and carrots with, you know, dried apple and a little macadamia nut icing on top with a little bit of maybe a muscat wine to flavor the dried apple. We have all kinds of... See, that's the thing, is I want people to understand that this is not about giving up pleasure in life. It's about enhancement of pleasure in life. And people who become nutritarians, and that's a word I've coined to represent people who are really eating this high-nutrient diet style for disease prevention and longer life, we're not giving up pleasure. We're enhancing pleasure in life. You know, we have the big, greatest gourmet chefs from all over the world making nutritarian menus. I just walked into a fancy restaurant in Aspen, Colorado, and they had all the nutritarian choices on the menu because so many people are into it out there. You know, they had a whole restaurant specializing in nutritarian food. We're talking here the fact that people can have great tasting food and great health, and let's take advantage of modern science and try to form an army of people who are really going to improve the health of, you know, get in great health and have fun doing it.
Right, and the packaged foods, because they have so many of these wrong fats and wrong sugars and so forth, have kind of coated over our taste buds. We don't really taste the food, we taste the fats and the sugars.
That's correct, and the more sweets you eat, sugar is very addicting, and salt, sweet, and fat, oil, sugar and salt are very powerfully addicting. Even outside of their effects on what I'm talking about, the detoxification addiction, they cause dopamine-type addiction where they actually make you feel, cravings. You get cravings for those foods. And you're right that when you eat a diet rich in salt, it deadens the taste for salt. So now you don't taste the natural salty flavor of natural vegetables. Vegetables have less flavor because you're so used to eating so much salt. When you're eating so much sugar, the natural sweetness in fruit, you don't appreciate a strawberry has flavor anymore. Because you have so much sugar in your diet. So the point is that when you eat more natural food, you improve your health so that your taste buds get stronger. You eat with more magnification of taste, and then, like you're saying, your taste also becomes more sensitized because you're not deadening it with all these stimulants. And all those things have the effect to magnify your enjoyment in eating.
We only have a few minutes left. Do you want to say a few words about autoimmune diseases and nutrition?
Well, you know, we have a protocol for autoimmune disease that includes a high cruciferous intake because it's usually a multiple defects in the immune system, but mostly in T helper cell function. And we have lots of...
Right, and the cruciferous vegetables are the cabbage family, right?
Right, and the word cruciferous means the flower is shaped like a cross, and they contain something... When you chew them, they form isothiocyanates, which are ITCs. They have dramatic protective effects against cancer and against hormonally induced cancers like breast and prostate cancer as well. So we're saying here they have effects that when we give people a diet rich in cruciferous, you know, we balance their fatty acids, make sure they have adequate vitamin D. Sometimes we add the beneficial bacteria for the gut, you know, and we get them in such great health that their asthma, their lupus, their psoriasis, their rheumatoid arthritis, all these autoimmune diseases that are considered life-threatening, and most physicians would tell you that you have to be on these dangerous chemotherapeutic medications to control the diseases for the rest of your life.
Right.
And you're never going
to
get well. This is a lifetime commitment to these dangerous drugs. And it's very exciting to watch all these people with autoimmune diseases getting well. And you can go on to drfurman.com and hit on the success stories link and read all these people who've recovered from autoimmune diseases, even people, you know, with the before and after pictures of their psoriasis and things, of how effective this approach can be, not just for prevention, but actually for therapy to people who want to use nutritional excellence, take it to the limit. And you'd be amazed at how many people who are suffering with these diseases will say, you know, I'll eat sawdust. Just get me well. Tell me what to do. I'll do it exactly. I just want to get well again. You know? And people aren't told that there's a possibility for them. So that's the thing here.
Right, and I have to say that I've spoken with a lot of people with autoimmune diseases, and they've tried everything, as you say, these dangerous chemotherapy drugs all the way down, and most of them will tell me that the only relief that they actually did find was through changing their diet. And so, you know, you might want to take a good look at what Dr. Furman is recommending. It is an area of very great interest for people with all manner of autoimmune diseases, and it deserves a lot of very hard looks. But it's a commitment in your own life, and so you're going to have to take hold of the reins, your own self, because you're the one who's in charge of what goes in your mouth. And that's for all of us. We really need to take a hard look at how we are feeding ourselves, how we are nourishing ourselves, and are we giving our bodies the building blocks that they need to do their best job for us? Because without our bodies, where are we? You know, it's what carries us around all day and what houses our thinking machine and all that good stuff.
Exactly.
So, Dr. Furman, thank you so much for being with us. I know you need to run soon. Anything you want to be sure to leave our audience with before you go?
No, I think we covered a lot, and I think, you know, they got the message. You don't have to be sick, and this could be fun, and I hope they, you know, if those who aren't, you know, become educated, because it's a fun subject to become educated in. It's interesting, and it's directly applicable, obviously, to give us all much a better life.
Great, thank you, and be sure to take a look at Dr. Furman's website, www.drfurman.com, that's drfurman.com, and this show will be archived at thepowerfulpatient.org, that's powerfulpatient.org, and it'll be up there for at least a year with a pointer to Dr. Furman's website. So thank you all for being with us, and special thanks to Dr. Furman. And we will be back next week with another show, and we hope that you'll be with us then. And be sure to be well this week and be a powerful patient. Thanks so much.